Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast and Happy New Year. We are so excited to have author Julia Ubengay on our show today to discuss her journey to minimalism and the writing of her new book, Declutter Your Heart and Your Home. She's going to share with us new ways to approach minimalism, offering us a practical pathway to peace by reducing stress, increasing presence, and deepening relationships. Julia, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thanks, Mary Grace. I'm excited to be here.
We're just going to start off and just go straight into your book. We're so excited you have this book coming out in April. And we just wanted to ask, like, what inspired you to write Declutter Your Heart and Your Home, and how does it reflect your own journey to minimalism?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm so excited about this book, and the content in this book, it's changed my life, because I'm not at all who I was 6 years ago before I embraced minimalism and started living out what I've written in this book. And so many moms are overwhelmed right now at home. And a lot of the reason that we're exhausted and overwhelmed is simply because we have too much stuff to manage in our homes, in our hearts, in our minds. In the average home now, it has over 300,000 things in it. 300,000. Oh, yeah. And the average home size has doubled in the last 50 years. So we're living in a society that has more stuff, more possessions than any society in the history of the world. And it's becoming a problem. There's a quote that I love by St. Teresa of Calcutta. She says, "The more you have, the more you are occupied. But the less you have, the more free you are." And in my experience, this is true. I've lived in a state of overwhelm, and it's not fun. So I wrote the book because I wanted to give moms the tools to live lighter, to live a freer life with less stuff if they feel called to. And to dive into my whole story, would you like to hear my whole spiel of my story?
Go for it. We'd love
okay,
it.
Okay, sure. So I have not always been a minimalist, pretty far from it, actually. And my story starts when I was younger. I grew up close to my grandma, and my grandma loved to shop. She would shop whether she needed something or not, whether she had the money or not. She loved to shop. I'd go into her home and I'd see her multiple closets. They were filled to the brim with new clothes. 80% still had the price tags on them. So when I spent time with her, we would go shopping. And I soon learned that shopping was fun. It was a way to feel good. It was a way to cover up hard feelings too. And so I carried this mindset into my 20s and I started making money. I started spending money. And pretty soon, I had a whole bunch of stuff and $40,000 worth of consumer debt. And when I thought about the debt, I felt bad. But when I felt bad, I went and bought something new because that's what I thought would make me feel good and make me feel happy. And so this cycle really just continued about until the time our second daughter was born. And I was working outside the home as a speech-language pathologist at the time. But I'd always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. That was my dream, to stay home with our kids. And around that time, my husband got a promotion, so I could stay home. I was so excited. And I just had this really idyllic vision of what stay-at-home mom life would be like. I thought we'd be baking cookies. The girls and I would be giggling over tea parties, snuggled on the couch, reading Little House on the Prairie. So in my mind, it was just going to be great. And about 2 weeks into the stay-at-home mom gig, I wouldn't have even called myself a stay-at-home mom. I would have said a full-time stuff manager would have been a better title, because that's what I did. I was constantly picking up things and, you know, organizing things, looking for things, cleaning things. It was just all encompassing. I was stressed. I was exhausted all the time. I couldn't really be present to the people around me. Like, I was there, but I wasn't really there. And I was just overwhelmed. And so a couple months after living this way constantly, I was diagnosed with postpartum depression. And I have this memory of this morning where I was up in the nursery, I was in the recliner chair, I was feeding our baby, and I was talking to God, really just pleading with God. I'm like, God, what is going on here? You know, this is not what I signed up for. Something needs to change. And I was reading the Bible, and a couple of verses out of Luke chapter 12 just jumped off the page at me. And they said, "Your life does not consist of possessions. Be rich in what matters." And so I paused there and I asked myself, was I rich in what mattered? Was I rich in relationships or time for a hobby I loved, time to know God? And the answer was no. No, I wasn't. And so that planted the seed that something in my life around the area of possessions needed to change. But I didn't know what. I didn't know where to go from there. And so that same week, I had a therapy appointment. And just at the end of the session, just when I was leaving, my therapist said, "Julia, have you ever heard of minimalism?" And I'm like, "Oh, you mean houses with white walls and next to nothing in them?" She's like, "No, look into it. There's more to it than that. I think you might be interested." So I was curious, and I just, did a Google search right away in my car and realized there's a lot of resources about minimalism. And so I started reading books and blogs and listening to podcasts about it. And this idea that I didn't need all this stuff to be happy, and in fact, I'd be a lot happier with less of it, because then I'd have the time and energy to focus on who and what mattered. It was a mindset shift that was life-changing, and it finally gave me a vision of how to get out of this postpartum depression tunnel that I was stuck in. So I went all in on minimalism, and over the course of the first year, we let go of 75% of our possessions. And I started a blog at the time. I called it Rich in What Matters, based on the Bible verse that it spoke to me. And yeah, we've been living this way as a minimalist family for 6 years now. And we have four kids, ages 10, 4, well, 10, 6, 4, and 2. And then we have one more on the way.
Oh, congrats. That's
Yeah,
exciting.
next month, actually.
Oh,
Yeah,
wow.
I'm 35 weeks pregnant. Yes.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah.
This is very exciting to hear it too, because I think even with our audience, the idea, and I'd love for you to just go a little bit more into minimalism, but you've been living this lifestyle for 6 years. So it's never like, it's a good thing to remember that it's never too late to start. It's not something that you should start when you're right out of college or one of those things. But so can you go like a little bit more into minimalism and like you had said earlier, like white walls and nothing on the countertops or anything like that? Is that what minimalism is, or is it deeper than that?
No, but I think it's definitely deeper than that. But I think it has that kind of negative connotation that goes with it. That's what I thought at first of it. You think it's a person who's dressed only in black and only owns 100 things and doesn't have kids because they don't want their house to be messed up or something like that. And that's not it at all. Minimalism is really just a tool. It's a tool to live your life with intention. So it allows you to identify the essential and to eliminate the rest. And so really, it's just like I would define minimalism as making space for the things that matter by letting go of the things that don't. And this applies to more than just your stuff. It does apply to your possessions, but also your calendar, your thought patterns. It's really just this different way of living where you question everything. You're discerning what you let into your life. Does it align with what God wants for you? And, it's not about how much stuff you own. It's going to look very different for, a mom of two versus a mom of 10. And so really it's more about just making space for what matters and aligning your life and values and your choices with what matters.
And having those conversations, I'm sure, with your spouse too, because that's where it all, and then going into that. So, in your book, you have different steps, I guess, to start this process of, so you have the decluttering your soul, your heart, and your mind. Can you discuss how there's a, so Saint Jose Maria is one of my favorite saints, and he has this line where it's like, you can tell the state of your soul by the state of your bedroom, like if it's a mess or not. Or
Oh, I love
so
that.
it,
Oh, that's
and
good.
you mentioned that too in your book about how your home is also kind of reflects the state of your soul. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is, like you said, it's divided into three sections that parallel a journey through an outer and inner home. So section one is laying the foundation and decluttering the soul. So you've got your outer home, your foundation, and your inner home, your soul. Then section two, it's almost like you're journeying up through a home. So you're going to go up to the main floor in the heart. So like a chapter that you'd find in this section would be decluttering your wardrobe and letting go of comparison. So the chapters within the section are going to have a physical piece and then an inner decluttering piece as well. And then if you keep on journeying up, you get to part three of the book, which is decluttering the upstairs and the mind. An example of a chapter in this section would be like decluttering sentimental items and letting go of fear. So there's very much a inner decluttering component to the book. And what I found as I was decluttering is that as I let go of my unneeded physical items, I was actually curating two homes, an outer home and an inner home. So the first housed my possessions. And the second, the home of my soul, housed God. And, you know, I hadn't really thought about this before I started decluttering my outer world. It really made me think more about my inner world and what was the state of it. And I love this idea that, you know, we hear in 1 Corinthians 6:19, Paul says that our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. We've heard St. Teresa of Avila mention, you know, that the soul resembles a castle containing many rooms, just like as in heaven, there are many mansions, and that the door which we enter is prayer. And so this idea that we have this inner structure that is our soul, and I started wondering, what is the state of it? Like, what would it look like? And if Jesus was there knocking at the door, wanting to come in, could he even open that inner door of my soul? Or were there boxes of clutter that were blocking the door? Like, here's one of negative self-talk, here's comparison, reactivity, worry, like all this stuff inside that he couldn't even get in. And if he did get in, would he be like, would he be, you know, crouched in a corner and he couldn't even move because of all the clutter? Or could he stretch out and, you know, that would be more feeling the Holy Spirit's promptings, right? If he had space to move within my soul, I think that I equate that to like the Holy Spirit's promptings. And like, I couldn't feel any of that because of all the inner clutter. And so definitely, I think it's important to look at your external environment, know that it can serve as a lens to your inner environment, and not to do it in a judgmental or a shooting way. There's nothing beneficial with that, but more of a curious kind of reflecting way. You can ask, like, what is my home reflecting back to me? Is it chaos? Is it distraction? Is it peace? Is it calm? And are those accurate descriptors of my inner home as well? So I think it's worth thinking on.
Yeah, and asking those questions. You know, this will be out in the new year, and so there's a lot of New Year's goals and a lot of New Year's resolutions. So what could be some ways that, let's say, a mom or a parent's listening to this podcast really take to what you say and they want to start implementing it? How would you recommend going there from the start of, let's say, they know they have so much stuff and they don't know exactly what to do to even begin because it's so overwhelming.
So do you mean more of like tackling the outer clutter piece?
Yes, or
more
the outer like clutter first clutter? And then we can go deeper into it.
Yeah. So the outer clutter. So if you're looking around your home and you're just completely overwhelmed by your clutter, what I found for me worked the best, and there's really no right way to declutter your home, but I think there is a more efficient way to declutter your home. And a lot of people say to start in like a non-sentimental contained area. Maybe it's your kitchen drawer or your bathroom drawer. And so I tried this and I tried starting that way. But what I found was that I could have a really nice organized kitchen drawer and kid stuff everywhere. And I was still stressed and exhausted. So for me, like, that wasn't working. So what I realized I needed to do is I needed to look at the clutter in terms of categories that were causing me the most stress. And so then even just listing out the different clutter categories in your home, rating them on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 10 is crazy stressful, you know, 9, 8. And so you get this list of the order of what categories are causing you the most stress. And then you tackle them in that order, because then you're getting the most bang for your buck. For me, it was kids' clothes. They were like the bane of my existence. I needed to declutter them first. They were everywhere. Yeah. And so that's what I did. I decluttered the kids' clothes first. And I found that, wow, the house feels lighter immediately. The kitchen drawer didn't. But once I tackled that, the kids' clothes, it did. And You know, the kids then could put the clothes away themselves because the amount was manageable. And so that's what I would say. I'd say really kind of look around, ask questions. What's causing me the most stress? And also you can ask, why do I want this area to be simplified? Maybe you, if we're still talking kids' clothes, maybe you want your kids to be able to put their clothes or even away or even wash their clothes independently. Give them some more autonomy over their clothes. And if you can match the number of clothes they have with kind of their age, like they're more, you know, less for a little kid, they're going to be able to manage that and do that. So
Yeah,
those are a
that's
couple
great.
things I would start with.
Yeah, and that gives that, I love that you said that, the autonomy to the child, because that helps you mentally to give them, to let them do that, and
Absolutely.
then they feel independent and confident, and then you're feeling confident because they're doing it. That's great. I do want to touch on, you had mentioned in the part, like the third section of your book where you talked about like the sentimental things, because what do you think about decluttering the sentimental? Because that's not just, I mean, like clothes are one thing. I mean, some people can find sentimentality in clothes, but like we collect like things from our parents or things from family members who passed away and things like that, that have more, rather than their things, they're actually, they kind of have a emotional aspect to them. So how would you recommend kind of that decluttering?
Yeah, that's a great question. And those are the hardest things typically to declutter because, like you said, they do have that emotional connection. We are afraid that our memories are going to go away if we let go of the item that those deep memories are connected to. And so, first of all, I think it's important to realize that our memories are stored in ourselves, not in our stuff. That being said, certain things can trigger memories like that have more like maybe a smell to it or a texture to it. Some of those I like to keep more, but there's so many things that when we look at, we're going to keep our memory and we don't really need them. So we can take a picture of them and make maybe a sentimental items album on our phone, and we can scroll through that same memories, a whole lot less stuff. I would just say keep your favorites, your very favorites, because a lot of times we have boxes in our garage, in our basement, in the back of our closet, just boxes of all the stuff that we think we need to hold on to, and we're not actually enjoying that stuff. We're not sharing it with our kids. We're not getting any practical use out of it or the emotional value out of it because it's just sitting in a box. And so what I've done is I've got a basket on the top of my closet, just one basket full of sentimental items that can help to set a boundary. Like I'm going to keep as many sentimental items as I want, as long as they fit in this basket, right? Not 15 boxes, just this one basket. And so I've got this basket and I can pull it down and I can show things to my kids. I can show them my grandmother's handwriting. I can show them this little wooden camel I bought when I was in Egypt. And then I can tell stories about my life. And those really, the things come to life that way. And if you had them packed away in boxes, they wouldn't. So those are a couple ideas. Just, and don't let fear take over too. I mean, pray about it. Trust that God will touch your memory and allow you to remember the things that He wants you to. I think there's an element of trust in there too.
I love that. I'd like to touch on the faith aspect too, because you had mentioned in the midst of kind of your overwhelm, sitting and taking care of your daughter, and then having those two prayers, those two Bible verses come to mind. How else has faith played a role in, like, how does it play a role in, yeah, just having this mindset of minimalism, and decluttering of both heart and home?
Yeah. So I think that with minimalism, you're looking at getting rid of things in your life, letting go of what's not important, but you still have to choose what you fill that space with. So if you're choosing it with unintentional scrolling or, you know, shopping, you're not really going to be living a more meaningful, connected, present life when you let go of your things. So faith plays an important role because what I've found is that to fill that time, that extra space with a deeper relationship with God, with prayer, that's what leads to lasting peace. And also, I think that when you are looking at your stuff more from a faith-based perspective, you can detach from it more. And this is really important when you are decluttering and letting go of things. And In scripture, we don't see any blanket statement. It's interesting that says to follow God, you have to let go, or to follow Jesus, you have to let go of all your stuff. We saw Simon Peter did, and the rich young man was asked to. But then there's people like Lydia in the book of Acts, who she used her home and her possessions to become the first European church. So there's no blanket statement that says we have to let go of all of our stuff to follow Jesus, but there is this underlying connection that we need to give ownership to him of all of our stuff, right? It all comes from him anyway. So the question isn't how do I give everything away, but how do I follow Jesus with everything? And so I realized in decluttering that I needed to detach from my stuff. I needed to give him access to everything, my possessions, my bank account, my thought patterns. So not just what I would declutter, but also what I would keep. And also, I think it's important with detachment to realize that the things of the world are good and beautiful, but the truly good, the truly beautiful, they belong to a higher world. And so we can sense that goodness and that beauty in the worldly things, but none of them last. So I found an exercise helpful more to just think of your things as like a firework or a bubble or some other transient thing that you can observe in the moment and then let them go, because none of it's ever ours, and it wasn't ever ours in the first place, and it's all passing. And I love St. Francis of Assisi's work on this too. He says, when you leave this earth, you can take nothing with you that you've received. And it's just kind of that idea that can be helpful too in decluttering.
That's great. Oh wow. So I'm gonna shift gears a little bit now. You have four kids right now, and you're expecting your fifth. And how does that look with children? That minimalism mindset and teaching them how to embrace that as well. Because yes, you have parents who like to dote on their, or grandparents who like to dote, or aunts and uncles who like to dote on their children. You have kind of kids, if they go to school, they can tend to, compare with what they have versus what other kids have, kind of those kinds of things. How do you help guide your children to this understanding of minimalism, but then also just also your detachment idea?
I think one of the things that I've found most helpful is to give the kids ownership in the whole process. Also, and I'll come back to that in a minute, but also the way you talk to your kids is almost more important than what you say to them. Because if you are talking about letting go of toys, but you have this kind of uneasy about it, you're kind of afraid it might harm your kids to let go of their stuff, they're going to sense that, and they're going to feel fear and resistance toward it too. So really work through your own fears first, any of your own hesitations, so you can talk to them from a place of assurance and calm. A great book is called Simplicity Parenting. It's by Kim John Payne. I read that before we decluttered any toys, and it makes a great, it has all the research in why kids thrive in a simpler environment, and it can really help, banish any hesitations that you have as a parent in simplifying. And so once you've worked through your stuff first, then give your kids ownership. Don't be a decluttering dictator. That doesn't do any good at all. Kids are naturally generous, and when you can set up the environment in a way that it's their choice and they're letting go of their things, it helps out a lot. Like I'll just even just like last week, we decluttered our kids' toys, but I just talked to them. I said, "Hey, there's kids that don't have as many toys as you guys. You guys will probably get new things at Christmas. So why don't we just find a few things if you want to, don't let go of anything that you love, but anything you don't love anymore, just let it put it in this bag." I just put like a reusable shopping bag next to our toy bin, and I'm like, "You can just put what you want in here, and I'll take it to those kids." And then I left the room, and then they can just decide what they want, and they can fill it with that. And it's amazing because I am always surprised at what they decide to let go of. If I was doing it myself, I wouldn't have donated that. I'm like, "You sure you want to let go of your doctor's kit? Okay, all right, some kid will love this. That's fine with me." Yeah, so I just kind of let them do that. And I really think that living with less minimalism, it's one of the best gifts you can give your kids, because you do show them that happiness isn't found in doing what everyone else does or owning what everyone else owns. So it's been great for us.
That's great. Yeah. And yeah, and it's just a good, I love that you said children are naturally more generous. I think that's so true. And tapping into that and letting them tap into that too is so powerful for them, for each other, like teaching, learning from each other about the things that they're giving up. And then also what, just as they grow up and get older, like they're having that more generous mindset anyways to begin to, because you started that when they were young. I love that. So what are some things that you hope your readers will take from this book, Declutter Your Heart and Your Home, and how can it inspire them to embrace a simpler life?
Yeah, I think that besides having a lot of practical tools, the book is full of practical inner and outer decluttering tools. I think I would really just hope that people can shift their focus away from the temporary stuff of this life toward heaven, toward the eternal treasures that never perish, that never fade. And Paul said in Timothy, he said, "We brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it." And so I want the book to serve as a reminder of that in the way that we choose to use our time and our energy. Is it focused on our stuff or is it focused on God? And we have that choice. We weren't designed to live weighed down by stuff, and we're made for more open spaces. That feeling that you get when you get in a beautiful open space, we feel our soul expand. We're made for more of that. And to pursue things that matter, relationships, God. So, I'm no finished product for sure. I'm still, using the tools in this book and working through everything. But I just wanted to let people know through this book that there is another way to live. There's a lighter way, a freer way, a better way to live. And then I wanted to give them the tools to do that.
I would love just if you could share with our audience. I know you are on social media. You have some great reels and things that are just
Oh,
little bits of
thanks.
tips and all that. But your book is coming out in April. Is there anything else you'd like to share for our audience to be able to either find your book, where they can find it, and when it's coming out, if they can pre-order, and then anything else if there's social media?
So the book is available now by or for pre-order wherever books are sold, wherever you like to buy books, you can go there, you can pre-order the book. It is going to come out April 15th. And so you can find me at richandwhatmatters.com. That's my blog. You can subscribe. And then my Instagram is at richandwhatmatters.
Great. Perfect. Well, Julia, thank you so much for being on the Ferris Love podcast and praying for you and your baby. It's super
Thanks
exciting.
so much. I appreciate the prayers and thank you for having me. This was a fun conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.